Welcome to the Good Hard Story Podcast, where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the exact same story. I'm Catherine Wolf, and I'm a stroke survivor, a speaker, an author, and co-founder of Hope Heals. Tune in here every week for conversations about wholeheartedly living in a good hard story. Join me in this joyful rebellion to the darkness where we discover the treasures hidden in our hurting. Hey friends, so it's been 15 years since I survived a stroke that left me with lifelong disabilities. And honestly, so much of my pain and the suffering is a mystery to me. And yet, I've spent many days just wrestling with the darkness. And I'm probably in some ways still there, still processing and wrestling and marinating on it all. And I definitely do not have all the answers to why hard things happen. No. But I've learned to find treasure in the darkness. And I deeply want the same for you. So, if you are looking for a companion to walk alongside you on your darkest days, I've written a new book, and I would love for you to get it. It's called Treasures in the Dark, and it's available for pre-order today at treasuresinthedark.com. I'm really, really excited about this book, guys, because it speaks honestly about processing our pain, which is so important. It's divided into 90 little miniature, I'd call them reflections, just easy to read, short devotionals to take specific moments and situations from my story or that I'm thinking about, and I'm applying them to you and your story right where you are. The book arcs from hurting to healing to hoping, 30 of each. And honestly, this is what I needed when I went through my very darkest time and was coming out of it. This is the book I wish I would have had. So if you pre-order the book, you automatically get the book mailed to you on April 9th. But in the meantime, instantly, you will get an incredible whole separate ebook of prayers. It's a guide, like a manual, for how to pray in the dark, and it's packed with over 20 pages of bonus resources. You got to get that. You'll also get a series of personalized email messages that speak to your specific places of pain. So think like this really cool, curated, choose your own adventure email journey for what you are actually going through. You're also going to get an invitation to a special virtual conversation with me, and you don't want to miss that. I want to see you there. So please grab your copy today at treasuresinthedark.com. Now, let's get to treasure hunting together. Friends, this is episode number 54, titled How to Deal with Low-Grade Sorrow. And it's based on entry number 26 in the new book, Treasures in the Dark, entitled A Low-Grade Sorrow. So as you probably know, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while or tuned in to me at all, is that I had a massive stroke out of absolutely nowhere as a 26-year-old new mom. I was married 3.5 years, and my baby was 6 months old, 6 months and 5 days old, I should say, at the time. And I was unable to care for that baby in any physical way for several years. And I honestly count it as the greatest loss caused by the stroke. There were a lot of losses, for sure, but the motherhood piece was decidedly the most painful of any. I I just couldn't understand in the early days that I couldn't take care of the baby. It just was this, it just didn't connect in my brain that suddenly my exclusively breastfed little sidekick was now being cared for by other people, and he could come visit me in the hospital, but wouldn't stay in the hospital bed with me. I just knew that, of course, this is the moment. Whenever I'd see him and they'd bring him into the room, I would think, oh, this is the moment that he will stay here with his mama, who will take care of him because I am his mother. And in retrospect, in processing through the years, we've sort of thought and learned that perhaps the maternal instinct is in fact deeper than any other instincts, that I wanted to care for that baby when I clearly could not. I mean, goodness, I couldn't even see or speak or eat, or my hand didn't work, and so many things were messed up. I hadn't relearned to stand or walk or even sit up yet, but I wanted to care for that baby, and I just knew there was a way to modestly breastfeed him in the hospital bed and just keep him there. And it was traumatizing every day when sweet family or friends would take him out of the hospital and take him, quote unquote, home for a nap. And I just couldn't understand, like, wait, home is with mom. What could that possibly be? We actually have kind of a signature photograph that I've talked about a lot. Maybe we can somehow link to it in show notes. I don't know. The photograph was taken on my first Mother's Day. And it's really emotional for me to see that photograph because I have no memory of that day. Nothing, no memories. And sweet Jay is holding James, who is dressed in a mom onesie with a big M-O-M on the onesie. I think it's from Sprinkles Cupcakes. Thank you, Anna Stover. And they come in and are leaning over my hospital bed. And I'm completely unconscious. And it's a complicated photograph to see because I'm so glad we have it. I'm so glad that, you know, I don't remember the Mother's Day, but I have a photograph of it. But that's really, really hard to look at. And just know that that memory will never be. You know, it's tough. I honestly count it as the worst part of the whole ordeal was losing my motherhood. And I wasn't present for most of James's first in life. And then when I began to slowly recover, he and I were progressing at the same pace. So I'm relearning to walk, he's learning to walk. I'm relearning to eat food and trialing baby food, and he's eating baby food. I mean, it was wild. It was sweet in some ways, but it was mostly just really sad. And I can remember in physical therapy, they would get my physical therapist, who I love and were wonderful and retaught me to walk and live in many ways, would get a weighted ball, you know, like a weighted medicine ball type thing, and write, on a piece of tape on it, James. And so I would practice lifting up baby James, which was a weighted ball at the time. And I think it was actually his weight even initially. Like they calculated to get a ball that was the same weight as the now, I guess, 8.5-month-old baby by the time I moved to group brain rehab. And, you know, it was so maddening because I could barely lift on that ball for months. And it does something to your psyche to not be able to do in your body what your brain thinks you should do. So you're trying, you know, the classic example I use is I would tell my brain would tell my hand to move a marble across a table in occupational therapy, and my hand just wouldn't do it, would not cooperate. And the same was true with lifting up that medicine ball or trying to walk a step in those early days. It was just, it was really, really hard, and really, really hard to interact with Jamesy. I mean, very tough. Years later, my team of doctors gave me the go-ahead to try to have another baby. And I convinced myself that this new baby was going to redeem the experience of losing my motherhood the first time around. So I just knew that this new baby would make all okay that had happened in the past with my motherhood. And honestly, when John was born, and then when he was 6 months, 5 days old, I guess 6 months, 6 days old, I would be doing my first with him. So I have no frame of reference for the first time James did blank after 6 months, 5 days, and then John's doing it. And it was weird. It was much more complex than I imagined it would be. It wasn't all good feelings, I gotta be honest. I felt almost like jealous for James that he had mommy for these moments, that John had mommy for these moments. And I also just felt so sad that I wasn't around for those moments with James, that I almost like didn't love having all of them with John, which was so weird because I thought I would just treasure them and relish them. But it was wonderful, yes, but it was sad too, because it highlighted what hadn't been with James, and that was just tricky. I was taken aback by just the low-grade sorrow that I would feel all around the mothering component of my story, and in some ways, so much of my story. You know, there is just so much joy and hope in my story and in my personality. I'm very exuberant, and I never, ever want my personality, my wiring, my true hope in the Lord and joy of the Lord to imply to a listener or reader or observer, however, that there's not sorrow in this story and sadness. And a low-grade sorrow that I believe will be lifelong. And that's tough because you want to say everything is fully better now and redeemed. And the reality is, no, I don't think so. Not for me. And that's okay. I think we can live in that space where there is true, true hope, true joy in the Lord. And there can still be a low-grade sadness. I love how the end of Ecclesiastes 3:11 says that no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. No one knows the end, the true end. I think there will be a low-grade sorrow throughout all of my life, honestly. And I love the thought. If y'all know that David Crowder song, where he writes that earth has no sorrow that heaven can't heal. I have long loved those lyrics because we aren't in heaven yet. We are on earth. There is sorrow, and earth has no sorrow that heaven won't heal. One day in heaven, there will be no more sorrow, no more pain, no more sadness. But that is not today. While we are decidedly on earth in human bodies with human pain. And I think that is so important. So what I wanted to share with you guys today about this low-grade sorrow that you may very much feel acutely in your story is just some ways, three simple points of how I have learned to deal with the lifelong low-grade sorrow that I feel in my story, and I pray that it will bless you and yours. Number one, I identified where the sorrow actually was. I identified what the sorrow actually was. At a deeper than thought level of all of our souls, we know our stories, ultimately the big story, are supposed to have a happy ending. We long for that. But we don't know how we're all going to get that happy ending, do we? I have a quote from this entry that I would like to read. The space between the knowing and the not knowing is where a low-grade sorrow pulses in my heart and in yours. It remains even in the midst of so much restoration. Some of our hurts will be healed only by heaven. That's the end of the quote. And that thought just sends chills up my spine. I think sorrow in all of our lives can feel so humiliating. Honestly, I have felt that. I felt on a visceral level like I should not feel this way. What is wrong with me? I think there was shame and guilt and recognizing my disappointment. Even though I had this healthy, beautiful new baby, I just felt guilt and shame for feeling guilt and shame. You may know what I mean. Honestly, we have to identify what is. We have to identify it. We have to name it to tame it. So listener, I want to ask you, what is the source of your low-grade sorrow today? Point number two. I realized that the pain could be my proof. I'll say it again. I realized that the pain could be my proof. I think we have to pay attention to where our hearts ache. I think that dull pain has something important to teach us. Low-grade sorrow proves that something beyond this present pain is in the story. I love the C.S. Lewis quote from Mere Christianity. If I find in myself desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. Isn't that beautiful? I was made for another world. I don't pretend to understand what heaven will be like, but I know there will be no more pain. All will be deeply, truly well one day. One day, everything will finally make sense. There will be complete wholeness that I don't understand at all, honestly. So, listener, what version of wholeness are you imagining in your life right now, today? And number three, I readjusted my heart of hope. I readjusted my heart of hope. I was placing my hope for healing on the shoulders of an unborn second baby, which super healthy to do that, I know. He doesn't really need the weight of all of my hope for healing. And I was putting it on a tiny baby named John Nestor. Yeah. That is not okay. Super weird, codependent, enmeshed, all the things. I had to learn where my hope belonged. In God's promise that He'll have the last word. I love the deep truth of 1 Peter 5:10. Honestly, I clung to the hope of 1 Peter 5:10. So deeply after my stroke. I can remember way back on my BlackBerry in 2008, making it my signature byline even on my emails once I could email again. 1 Peter 5:10 says, after you've suffered for a little while, the God of all grace who calls you to eternal glory will himself strengthen, affirm, complete, and establish you. I have loved that verse so much in many, many translations. Please Go read them all, listener. We have to recalibrate our heart of hope every day. We have to make it a habit. I've talked about that before on here. Hope has to be a habit because, honestly, as I've said before, and this is a quote, the practice of hope carried me when the feeling of hope failed me. We have to practice it. We have to make hope a habit. Part of adjusting my heart of hope, honestly, my core of hope, my deepest core of hope, is recognizing that cycle, that it is a cycle in Romans 5. You may know that beautiful passage that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope, and hope will not put us to shame. And I think that beautiful verse teaches us two important things. One, it is that cyclical nature that there is suffering and perseverance and character, and you go back in because there's no quota, and you get it again and you get it again, and it's cyclical. In our Western world, we want to make things linear, like one and done. Went there, got the hope, got out, suffered, not doing it again. And the reality is, that's not how it works. We may suffer and need to produce a deep perseverance, and that perseverance produces character. We get the character. And we may, in fact, go back in, but maybe we're a little stronger when we go back in. Maybe we've learned some things in the darkness. I think the other thing that beautiful passage teaches us is that it can create some shame to suffer. We can feel filled with shame. Suffering can feel embarrassing and like old news. Everybody's heard it. I'm the suffering girl, and there's shame in that. That I just feel embarrassed. I feel humiliated by this story and the unending suffering of my life. And yeah, I'm humiliated. And the reality is that, as a beautiful verse tells us, we will not ever be put to shame. I also deeply love the truth of Psalm 46:5. It says, God is with her. She will not fail. God will help her at the break of day. Guys, the break of day means after the darkness, which you know I gotta love that in this book, Treasures in the Dark. That after the darkness, God's gonna help her at the break of day. I love that thought, that the break of day is coming. Hold on, and God will help her. She will not fail. That's a beautiful, beautiful truth. Once again, read Psalm 46:5 in multiple translations and listen to those beautiful words. Let them fall on your head and heart. So for you, listener, my final question is, which of God's promises can be a heart of hope for you today? I love this notion of a heart of hope. I hope my not very articulate mouth is making that really clear. Heart of hope, so important. Your core, your center of hope that you build up. You know, I think so much of that is built, so much of our hope is built by reviewing and processing our stories, where we've been. I love the thought, as I said in my second point, that you can realize, recognize, wake up to that your pain is your proof. That's a very big thing, guys. I encourage you to spend some time processing, marinating, most notably with a friend, honestly, or a licensed professional. But, you know, if you're getting coffee with somebody, how about you talk a little about your story? How about you begin to process what God is doing in your life, through your life? I think informally even, just beginning to share parts of our story with an empathetic listener, mark it down, will change your brain chemistry, will change the neuropathways and create new neuropathways so that you can begin to see a new story for yourself, so that you can feel differently about your story and your history. I love this thought so much that I recently started a quote unquote suffering club, which the whole notion of this club is that we get together and listen to each other's stories of suffering and hope, honestly, and just hear. There's no programming. There's no like curriculum. It's just get together and talk about what's hard in our lives. And maybe talk about what's hard in our lives today, which may not even the big, hard suffering with a capital S in our story. You know what I mean? There's one sweet girl in the group, who Mary Elizabeth, a precious friend of mine, whose son John passed away last fall. If you've been tracking with me, you've heard me talk a lot about John Stone. And Mary Elizabeth is in our group. And we could ask Mary Elizabeth unrelated to John questions about suffering, because guess what, everybody? Everyone on this planet has pain associated with many aspects of life, not just one. Our pain is just not one note. Our suffering isn't all about this one thing. It wreaks havoc on many things, and there's unrelated sadness and traumas in all of our stories. So even if you don't formalize it into a club, I suggest you start processing your suffering in your life with somebody somewhere. I've talked on here before about how I go to an amazing emotional therapist. And I say emotional so you don't think it's just a physical therapist or an occupational therapist. I go to emotional therapy, and my counselor is a wizard, but she doesn't need to do much to open up the flood of all that's inside me to process my own life and my story. And we can do that for each other. And it does require listening well, which is very hard for us in this modern world. They're so busy and we're only half listening. Honestly, it changes how we feel about our story to hear the stories of others. So if nothing else, selfishly listen well to each other's stories. Anyway, I digress and want to remind you of point three again, that readjust your heart of hope. But actually, this is all part of readjusting your heart of hope, honestly. I want to ask you in closing, which of God's promises can be a heart of hope for you today? Now, in closing, I want to read another quote from this entry in the book. I'm going to leave you with this little treasure takeaway today. Woohoo, that was a lot of alliteration. You know I love that. So the treasure takeaway: no matter how much healing I receive, a low-grade sadness will remain. It's an ache that is proof of the wholeness I am designed to experience. God bless you, friend, on your journey. I hope, above all in this episode, I can perhaps normalize some of your feelings. If there is sadness and sorrow still in the story, that's normal. I feel that. Most people who are very in touch with just hard trauma they've been through and coming out the other side can attest there are scars. Definitely, there are big old scars. But scars can be the very best part. Scars mean that you lived. You survived whatever you have been through. But those scars also mean there's damage that's happened. And while we are on earth, that means there is sorrow. So I pray that blesses your heart today, sweet friend. Whatever you are walking through, whether you are hurting or hoping or healing on your journey, may you feel the deep comfort of his presence right where you are today. May God bless you. Thank you for joining us on the Good Heart Story podcast. To learn more about what we are doing, follow us on Instagram at Hope Heals, Check out all things Hope Heals at hopeheals.com. Don't forget to subscribe to this wherever you get podcasts, and please feel free to share this episode with somebody who needs to hear it. Good Heart Story Podcast is a production of Good Heart Story, LLC. It is produced by Leah Case and Mary Austin Hall. And I am your fearless and fabulous host, Catherine Wolf. Come back and join us every week where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the very same story. We are with you and for you, friends.